Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know that the Hair Radio Show with Terry Hines is the longest-running radio broadcast on hair and beauty talk in the world? It's a broadcasting hair industry institution. Be a live guest on air and join our long list of amazing celebrities and hair and beauty industry luminaries who've all been on our show. Give our office team a call at 833-402-8882. Again, that's 833-402-8882. Or visit us online at hairradio.com. Because you haven't made it until you've made it to Hair Radio.
It's time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Gary Hines.
Hair Radio. Welcome to the Hair Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. He's the host with the most, Mr. Kerry Hines.
Good morning, and welcome to an all-new live edition of the Hair Radio Morning Show. We're the longest-running daily live broadcast on hair in the world, 25 years and counting. Now, on today's broadcast, we've got the latest in hair and beauty talk, great music, and much, much more. I must thank our Carafe Hair Products, Hair Nation Expo events, Salon TV Network, and all of our amazing advertisers who are responsible for getting this episode on the air. Now, if today is your first time tuning in, thank you. And remember to press 1 to make a live comment or shout-out during the show. We're here each weekday from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 5 to 8 Central. Now grab your cup of coffee and enjoy today's show.
I don't know.
As women, it seems like we carry the weight of the world on our shoulders, and that weight is directly balanced between your 2 feet. And with this balancing act, who do you think is suffering? It's not the kids. It's your feet. While running errands, paying bills, or dodging traffic, you could be ruining your feet. Wearing the wrong shoes for the wrong period of time can cause more damage than you think. Hammer toe and bunions are the leading deformities in black women, and Dr. Yolanda Raglan is the first black and only female podiatrist with practices dedicated solely to the correction of these type of deformities. So let this black girl do some magic and fix your feet. For more information, visit fixyourfeet.com, providing medically necessary surgery with a cosmetic result.
I'm Maggie Anderson. I am the creator of the Empowerment Experiment and the author of Our Black Year, my family's year-long stand completely living off of black-owned businesses. When we decided to take on this public pledge, we had no idea how hard it would be. There was only one black-owned grocery store in all of Illinois, and that grocery store closed 5 months before we finished our year. And I have 2 little girls. That means no fresh milk, no fresh meats, no fresh produce. But I put them through that because we took the stand and we wanted really to do something extreme out of love for our community, to expose how few black businesses there still are, to refute negative stereotypes about black-owned businesses, and to expose economic injustice that still persists in America. After the year, I decided that I could not go back to corporate. I could not go back to law. I've made this issue of economic racism and really trying to create economic empowerment in our black community my life. The black hair care firms, they sustained the civil rights movement. Black women created these companies, huge, thriving companies, and we needed that. We talk about Black Wall Street now because we shine a light on what happened in Tulsa. Most black neighborhoods were anchored by these Black Wall Streets. And if we could bring that back, America would be better. I'm not saying bring all of it back. That would probably be impossible. But we can bring black hair care back. There are great black hair care companies that exist, black-owned hair care companies that exist right now. And it would be wonderful for, in America, just like other groups own their culturally relevant products and industries, that the black community can own the biggest black hair care brands, that the black community can own black beauty supply stores. 3% of the beauty supply stores in black neighborhoods, and black people know what I'm talking about. If you go into a black neighborhood, you're going to see a beauty supply store, and they're going to sell all the black hair care products that only black people use, and they are not owned by black people. So I've issued the Black-Owned Hair Care Challenge, just asking everyday folks to say, "Hi, my name is Maggie Anderson, and I accept the Black-Owned Hair Care Challenge," and tell the world that from now on, if I'm going to buy black hair care products, I'm going to make sure it's from a black-owned company.
Hi, everybody. This is Queen Tree, and I'm shouting out the Hair Radio Show with Terry Hines.
Crystal Jones Vaughn of Assuage Hair and Body, and I love the Hair Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Kerry Hines.
Favorite guest? I've been asked who my favorite guest is, or who are some of the interviews that really kind of stick out with you, or some kind of variation thereof. I'm Kerry Hines, and I have to say, in honor of looking at our big milestone of the Hair Radio Morning Show, it's given me some time to reflect, and I wanted to share some of these reflections with you guys. the fans of the broadcast. Let me see. Thinking about guests, it gives me that doing the Hair Radio Morning Show is a great joy because I get to live out, you know, meeting my heroes, growing up and listening to amazing singers, watching amazing television actors and movie stars, and then getting an opportunity to literally talk to them, and they know my name. It's been extraordinary. And so to think some of the most influential artists of our time, we've had an opportunity to welcome right here to the Hair Radio Morning Show. Folks like, of course, the legendary multi-Grammy award-winning We Are the World singer, Miss Dionne Warwick, who worked, of course, on that project with Lionel Richie, Michael Jackson, Tina Turner, Cyndi Lauper, Diana Ross. The list just goes on and on and on. And so to have this amazing artist, Miss Warwick, to even know who I am, let alone to join me live on the Hair Radio Morning Show for a special interview, was quite remarkable. And now, I had already interviewed Dionne's sister, Dee Dee, who had passed away several years back, and I had interviewed Dee Dee twice. And Dee Dee's voice to me, I never will forget her voice. It sounded so much like Dionne's voice. So this was great. When I had a chance to talk to Dionne prior to me conducting the interview, I remember I had a chance to say, to catch Ms. Warwick's ear, and I said, you know, I interviewed your sister Dee Dee, not once, but twice. And it was always one of my favorite interviews, just the most beautiful voice. And so, you know, they had a big group, the Drinker Sisters and all of that. And so, great thing. So when I'm asked about my favorite guest, Dionne Warwick has to be way up high.
Ladies, do you love a man with a well-groomed and sexy beard? Men, do you suffer from patchiness or irritation and want a fuller beard? Well, let me introduce you to the hottest beard care products on the market. Rugged Evolution features 16 amazing balms, oils, shampoos, and accessories. Our products are sure to meet the demands of all your beard care needs. For more information, go to ruggedevo.com. That's ruggedevo.com.
And remember, rugged is the new smooth.
Stop dealing with embarrassing hair loss. The Hair Loss and Hair Rejuvenation Clinic, located inside K's Design Team, has the latest technology in hair restoration so you can get your confidence and 100% real hair back by working with a licensed trichologist with the U.S. Trichology Institute and AMCA certified, and multi-therapeutical approach is used to diagnose and determine the best program for you. So book your appointment today. Call 316-789-0110 at K's Design Team at 718 North Baltimore in Derby, Kansas.
You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now with me, I have a very, very special guest. We're talking about industry superstar and legend, an absolute legend in the hair and beauty industry, the one and only Mr. Bernard Bronner. Welcome to the Hair Radio Morning Show. It's your first time joining us.
And it's such a pleasure to join you.
Thank you. So now hold it. Let's jump on in. And I have to tell everybody, you guys are hearing some of the wonderful background sounds here in New York City because we are actually out and about. Just had a wonderful opportunity to sit in one of our favorite new places here in Manhattan. So, Bernard, though, I want to talk about Bronner Brothers. Let's just kind of bring everybody up to speed. Now, you guys, of course, we're looking ahead to what's next for Bronner Brothers. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yes. This is year 75 for us, and we do several things as a company. The number one is we make products. We make the BB family of products, which is Tropical Roots, African Royale, and just BB products. Then we do the world's largest multicultural hair show every 6 months. And I also, on the side, do Upscale Magazine, which is one of the few magazines. It's only Upscale and Essence now that are on nationwide newsstands. So Upscale is 31 years old now. And due to COVID, we had a little postponing of issues, but we are now back on the newsstands all over the country. And we look for a great year for 2022.
Wonderful. Now, talking about the amazing Upscale Magazine, as you just so clearly pointed out, what's one of the biggest things that you want the message to be about Upscale and reaching out to the community?
Well, I'm second generation Bronner Brothers, and the first generation, my daddy always felt like, he always used to say that a community is no better than the people in it. So he did all kinds of things to help develop the people in the community. And as a second generation leader, I've taken that even further, and I love helping the community. One of my pet things is creating jobs. I've always felt like that is the worst thing can happen, a person lose their job. I've always said that once you lose your job, you next will lose your house. Then they'll come take the car. Then the family will leave you, the kids will leave you, and if you can't even afford to feed the dog walks away. So
wow.
you don't wanna have to be in a situation where you have no financial income coming in. So I have always loved providing jobs and helping people become entrepreneurs and finding that they can just, I mean, it's just a joy in helping people. So that's one of the missions that I have now is, like I say, I want to be known as a person who understands what our community needs and gives it to them. And like I say, my number one thing is providing jobs.
Wow. That means so much right now. I mean, you know, we're coming out of this period, let me just put it that way. We're forging ahead with amazing new opportunities. I see so much on the horizon for Bronner Brothers, for Bernard Bronner, and all that you're doing. And I'm just very excited. And I'm going to announce this. I'm going to just go ahead and put this out. We are launching Upscale Magazine Radio. And you heard it right here, folks. What can you tell us, Bernard? What do you think this is going to be about?
I think it's wonderful. So we're going to be working together and launching for 2022 Upscale Radio. And it will have a lot of hair radio interviews and a lot of hair radio, hair celebrities.
Exactly.
And it's going to be just awesome for 2022.
Awesome. Can't be any better than that. Now, I just want to say this, Bernard, and I appreciate you taking time. We never have a whole bunch of his time because you're a very, very busy man, and I so appreciate this in-person meeting, which we do so rarely here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. But what can you leave us with today? What words, like you inspired me as you know, I said this off air, I've said it on air. Bronner Brothers certainly has led the way. None of us really would be here. You know, you guys are a big part of the whole entire black hair industry. But what kind of advice or inspirational words you can leave us with today on the Hair Radio Morning Show?
Well, the biggest thing is we have all survived 2020, which means we are now tough and we can survive any and everything. So now that we've got all of the experience and have lived through a pandemic, we're tough. And I know Bronner Brothers and Bernard Bronner, we are going to show out for 2022 because we ready now.
All right.
Yes.
On that note, I want to thank you so much for being with us, and we look forward to all that you guys are going to be bringing to the table, as always. The one and only Bernard Bronner from Bronner Brothers. Who in the world doesn't know Bronner Brothers? Thanks so much, Bernard, for being with us.
You're welcome.
All right, folks, keep it right here. We've got a whole lot more of the Hair Radio Morning Show to go. Stay with us.
Are you a stylist, barber, nail tech, or involved in personal care on any level? Are you good at what you do? I bet you are. And as being as good as you are, that leaves you less time to handle your clients. I mean, as far as booking appointments, product sales, pricing, and all that. Well, I have something that'll help you on that end and still allow you to be great. ChairWatch. It's a new mobile booking platform that allows your client direct access to you. It'll allow them to book, change, cancel appointments, place themselves on standby, buy products, and even be able to send you direct messages. And that is just a taste of all the services that ChairWatch provides. Sounds good? Then check it out at chairwatch.com, or you can download the app via the Apple Store or Google Play. ChairWatch, a new and better way to connect with your clients.
All right, we're back live. You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Kerry Hines. It is Thursday morning, March 17th of 2022. It's our show number 686. That's show 686. And to all of those who celebrate St. Patrick's Day, happy St. Patrick's Day to you. Listen, folks, we have a very, very, very special broadcast today. Of course, we are marching towards our 700th live show, and we're going to be celebrating it in the morning. Sometime in April, we'll keep you informed of that. But one of the big things today that we're doing is a mid-show. So coming up about 7, a little after 7 this morning, Eastern Time, 6 o'clock in the morning, Central Time, we're looking back at David Babai. David, a celebrity hairstylist by any measure that's out there, we are going to be paying tribute to him this morning. And we've assembled a few comments from folks and some interesting things, along with the wonderful statement from David's publicist, but also David's words himself in his last appearance on our broadcast. So we will get all of that on. So please do not go anywhere. Now, up next is we've opened up our vaults. You know, a lot of this talk about going and moving towards the 700th big show and beyond of the Hair Radio Morning Show. Of course, you guys know that. Cheryl Morrow, Dr. Willie Morrow's daughter from out in San Diego, California. You guys know she's the editor of the wonderful newspaper his family runs out there. And Cheryl has been on our show. She's a legendary artist in her own right, hairstylist and educator. I wanted to get this on because she talks about generational wealth in the hair and beauty industry. And this is my favorite, one of my favorite pieces by Cheryl Morrow. Following that, we are going to be live with this incredible tribute, the first ever memoriam on air on the Hair Radio Morning Show, again paying tribute to our friend, the late David Babai. So we want you guys to stay with us. But up now, it's Cheryl Morrow again on generational wealth. I cannot wait. So guys, stay with us. We've got a lot that we will be getting into this morning.
Well, I think with all of the conversations that I've had probably in the last year, Kerry, and of course, you know, we've had our industry here, beauty and skin, and, you know, ethnic beauty has taken a hard hit. So I think one of the most important projects to me is to tell my story of just how I grew up in black hair care at the beginning of the boom, as the billion-dollar economic industrial revolution of what we call the curl, even though we were coming out of pressing curls and going into the afro. So that's one of the things I'm working on. It's a documentary of my life and how I grew up in black hair care. And some of people, it's funny, you know, because people would always say, you know, we had all this wealth and black dynasties and of generating black wealth. But where did the kids go? You know, where did the money go? Where did that whole wealth gap? Where where is it? And so I felt, you know, a sense of responsibility to at least tell it from my perspective. So that it's almost like that, all that wealth kind of like evaporated.
And so, well, that's what I'm going to ask you. Yeah, where did the money go? Where? That's the question, yeah. The million-dollar question here, literally.
Yeah.
We're talking about generations, you know, of hair industry superstar folks.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And, you know, so
it's a complex conversation because you can't talk about where the wealth went until you talk about there's a conversation that I do address called gerontocracy. And gerontocracy is when the passing doesn't happen. And your predecessors stay too long. And they stay too long because they're not adapting. And we always talk about how companies should adapt to the, you know, right. You adapt inside before you see signs of the changing of the trend or changing of the times. And so there's a thing that and when you get into the 70s and 80s, most of those companies were ran by men, black men. And so black men tend to look at their children differently.
Watch it, Cheryl Morrow. No, geez.
Black women, you know, no, they do. And it's, let's just say, you know, you have your John Johnson, you have your George Johnson, you have your Mr. Dudleys, you have your Mr. Morrows, you have your Mr. Bronners, you have the World of Curls and the Donnies and the Leisure Curls. You had these men. And so they did have children. Mm-hmm. But,
right.
You know, the limelight is addictive. The limelight is addictive. And they just don't see the continuity of their legacies through their children. It sounds like a good thing. They know they should do it, but they don't do it. You know, and so
there's a
cultural thing. And then when you have the Eunice Johnsons and the Celia DeVore, and you have Dr. Katie Wickhams, and you have this when you have women. They tend to let go a little easier. So those legacies can continue. But there is just like a real cultural thing. And then I get into it into the documentary because it's real talk. Mm. You know, this is not just us wanting to pass wealth. It's not us wanting to just close wealth gaps. You can't close wealth gaps if you don't have a continuity of the predecessor into the succession plan, which is your children.
I agree.
You can't close a gap because the gap keeps getting wider because white America keeps passing it on and locking it within their culture. We don't. It's a cultural thing.
We don't
get
really.
Into that.
It's a different
thing. Yeah, we don't get it.
Well, let me ask you
about
that
a little bit,
Cheryl.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that because, you know, I mean, on a simplistic term, in a very simple way. I talk to a lot of hairstylists, you know, throughout the years, and I always ask them about, you know, they open up the shops, and I say, well, what about your kids, you know, or they helping you or working at the shops and, you know, and this and that. And they cannot get those kids to help them at the shops. The kids generally take it for granted. You know, they've got all the money that comes from, the parents' hard work at these salons and barbershops, and they just go on and living a very, great life from the benefits of the financial aspect, but they do nothing to support the parents' hard work, and they truly are not going to be heading up any kind of, taking on a business. That's just not even on the table. And I always wondered about that, and I kind of think about it for my own company. So this is something that is very, very important, and it's a big disparity between the African-American community with regards to succession, I call it, and the people who are outside of our community. So this is really something that is very interesting to me, and I know you're on a on a different level with it, but it just, I don't understand. Is it just just something that the kids don't, you know, should we expect them to want to, you know, pass, you know, to continue on in their, with their parents' legacy? You know, is this something?
Yeah, think about it, Gary. I didn't want to be a barber. My father started out as a barber.
Right.
The key here is that Mr. Marl created a company. Now, think about it. Most hair, you know, because I'm a hairstylist. I get it.
Yeah.
The problem is that their hairstyling portion of their business is not a company. So there is no room to do other things besides maybe promotions or marketing of the, the parents' actual skill sets, which is doing hair. Where else is there other means of doing something else if the child or if the offspring is not at, doesn't want to do hair? And just think of this analogy, and I always tell them when I get this question, you know, do I, would I really want to inherit a cotton picking business? You know, black people pick cotton, would I want to pass that on? You know, so the physical portions of, you know, businesses are not companies. Businesses is one thing, and a company is another. So in a company is encased, which I always tell people, I'm an intrapreneur. I'm not an entrepreneur. I don't need to make anything. I don't need to discover anything. I don't need to do any of that. What I need to do is to come in with something already formed and take it to the next level. So because my father had a company, right, he had a company which had, you know, roots, and then it springed out with branches and leaves. So there was so many branches to him because they and just take the Johnson daughter, you know, with Ebony and Jet. Because Ebony and Jet and was really actually a beauty business. There was Duke and Ravine, which was Relaxer, and Duke was a men's line. There were so many other things to do within Johnson Publishing. So it was an actual company.
Right.
So that tends to allow the successor to kind of fit in and take the reins. But if you are just a business, which hair salons are, and barber, you tend and it's tied to the parent's physical skills. You really have a very difficult time with that, with the succession plan.
Well, now you are talking about, in this, in your upcoming documentary, we're talking about some of the biggest names in the hair industry. And so I'm just, one of the things that jumps out at me, have you heard any feedback from some of those, you know, some of those families, some of those super well-known hair industry superstar families? Have you gotten any feedback
yet?
What are their thoughts?
Well, the problem, when you are acquired by big companies like Procter & Gamble or L'Oreal, and you evaporate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you there is nothing to, unless they you stay on as a consultant or something of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
But no,
and that doesn't
usually
last too long. Yeah, eventually.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, Cheryl Morrow. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Just amazing.
Yeah.
Just amazing. I'm looking forward to this documentary.
I was in the studio doing San Diego Monitor News business as a publisher because we now had it at a podcast studio, right? And in the middle of I get a phone call from Chicago or someplace, and they want, you know, 1,000, you know, Willie Morrow blow dry novels. It's just that, you know, here I go, I'm in the newspaper, but I get calls about something that was created over 45 years ago, and it's still the number one heat tool on Amazon. That is succession.
Let's
something in beauty. It's an amazing thing.
Exactly.
Because that's a company,
And I want to remind, I absolutely want to remind everybody about the amazing legacy and lineage that you have. So we're talking about the Morrow family dynasty. So I'm in the hair business, and your father, as you just mentioned, that, starting with the novel, tell us a little bit about his invention, because that really, that hit the mark out there and made him pretty much a household name in the hair industry, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, just combs, period. I think that in those 60s, 1964, bringing to commercial market is the brilliance of Mr. Morrow, not the fact that creating or duplicating something that had already been done in the continent of Africa. So the comb in and of itself is not the invention. The invention is to be able to put it in industrial commerce to make it available, because if you didn't go to the continent of Africa in 1963, 1964, you wouldn't get it.
You wouldn't get it, right?
Yes.
Correct.
So the ability for him to take it, to redesign it, patent it, take it to the U.S. Congress, put it into commerce, and to commercialize it, monetize it, right, and productize it, and make it available for black people in the West Indies, black people in North America, black people in in Europe, and black people in Asia, black people in Africa too. They didn't know it was a thing, you know. So we could fashion and style our hair and be a part of the secular world. So the Afrocomb was put in the secular world by Mr. Morrow by redesigning it and industrializing it. It's the same process as taking tobacco. Yeah, tobacco is natural in its environment, but to make it be consumed and then enrich yourself by that great legacy called an Afrocomb, and then making other people have it in Cuba and you know, in Hawaii and other places. So that was the brilliance. Invented up to create this generation, and then you have the first one, and then the next generation of them, and then to have utility patents, and then go into, you know, making a comb and a blow dry so we can have blowouts, straighten hair, and things of that nature. That was, I think, the difference between a Mr. Morrow, a Joe Dudley, a Gardner, a Fashion, a different angle. To being part of the legacy of ethnic beauty.
Absolutely. And I just want to also bring attention to that documentary, because to me, 400 Years Without a Comb was so far ahead. Now, documentaries are a lot more, you know, out there. Maybe it has a lot to do with the pandemic that we have come through. But I do want to say that the documentary, that documentary really started a lot of the hair industry documentaries, if you will, to me. You know, I think it's one of the most well-known and most seen hair industry documentary in the world. So, and we're talking about 400 Years Without a Comb, and it's still out there, and I'm just loving that. So, again, we're talking about hair legacies.
It started out as a book. And I think that that is probably one of the reasons why it's the hair care, you know, historical Bible that everyone goes to, you know, because it's a three-generation book. In all three decades, Mr. Morrow rewrote it. And then in the last... in the last, the fourth quarter of its generation and its edition, he created, and Mr. Morrow just really deals with the culture inside of the plantation, and it starts there, because the commercial market that you and I enjoy was started on the plantation. It formed itself into. And because of that complete disconnection for about three centuries, that disconnection from the world's first organized beauty kind of, you know, that activity, the way we did it, you know, it was not quite done. When Europe went to colonialize Africa, that is where they learned hygiene. The roots of beauty is hygienic, not, you know, fashion and styling and things of that nature. But it was basically really had its roots in hygiene. And I think that starting there, only a black person could have done that, period. You know, no one cared about,
absolutely,
obviously, how you fashioned,
absolutely,
yourself and cleaned yourself and how you, you know, became this really sophisticated society and culture, and how you, you know, you did things, you know, with your body and your health and well-being. No one was interested in that type of story. So, yeah, once again, Mr. Morrow hit it on the head, you know.
And it didn't stop there. The San Diego Monitor News, I want to talk about that. Can you tell us a little bit, for those who are outside of the California experience, if you will, what exactly is that? And I believe that you go everywhere with it. So tell everybody about it.
We turned from New York. I lived in New York for 19 years. And, you know, one of the things that, and this is me, you know, I'm going to tell this story in the documentary. One of the reasons why Mr. Morrow got into publishing is not really because he had a great love for journalism, but black people don't really understand that it's legacy to get a newspaper. All hair care men, all hair care families, it was almost like a rite of passage. You had to get a publication. You know, most people think that John Johnson got the publication and then got into the hair business. No, John Johnson, was already in beauty. So their mentor, S.B. Fuller, always told them and taught Joe Dudley, George Johnson, which is Ultra Sheen, Johnson Product, and then John Johnson, which was Johnson Publishing. When you start your beauty line, you get you a newspaper. So Mr. Morrow was just following the great recipe and the great formula of success of S.B. Fuller, one of his mentors. So
yes, yes,
all of them got newspapers. So Mr. Morrow got created one in San Diego in 1986 because of the mentor Bill Thompson in creating. S.B. Fuller always taught them that you create your own advertising tool. So if you get on the cover of somebody else's publication, that was fine. But make sure that you are always, you create a product, you got to have a way to advertise it. So create a magazine in and of itself. Put some content. And you see how forward they were, actually? And
oh,
you
yeah.
think about
oh,
how,
yeah.
the,
and,
how
and
powerful
that,
content
yeah.
is today. Yeah.
But oh, absolutely. They were way ahead.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was opposite. You know, it was to be the power of the advertisement. You know, be ahead. Put yourself on your own cover. Put yourself, you know, look bigger than, you know, you actually are. You know, put your own content out there, your own stories, and then put yourself on the, you know, on the cover, and then put your own ads. And, you know, so it was always about advertising, the actual
yeah.
root business. So that's how Mr. Morrow
exactly.
got into it. And then, of course, and it just rolled into a journalistic product, you know, local business, local people, and things of that nature. And then
which I love,
it's been
yeah.
adjudicated for over almost, you know, we're heading into 4 years, you know. And so I had just taken over. And, of course, in 2010, I turned it digital. I saw the handwriting on the wall. And I was the first black paper in the state of California to be adjudicated and digitized at the same time. So it was I made sure that I created a hybrid. And it was probably because of my technical skills, you know, graphic skills and technical skills and all that stuff I learned while I was in New York, that I could make that turn and that very, very quickly. So,
well, I love
we
the stories
are,
that you guys cover. Yeah, yeah. We've got to tell folks,
thank
how
you,
can they
by
get
the
their
way.
Hands or see? Oh, absolutely. I love when you guys put things out on the internet and, you know, and I see and you do such good work. I love the pictures and the graphics and everything, the, you know, the You're not telling the same stories that everybody else is telling. And that's...
No, I refuse to.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think that our people need orientation and information. You know, because, you know, at the end of the day, we have a saying, if you're not informed, news doesn't matter. You know, if you don't know anything.
Whoa.
You don't know anything.
I have to write that one down. If you're not informed, the news doesn't matter. Wow, that says it all. Wow, okay. You know, let me bring everybody on up to speed with this. If you're kind of just joining us, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to the All Know Here Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines, my very special guest today. She really returns back to us. It's been quite a while. So she comes back to the Hair Radio Morning Show. You guys know her. She was out here with us on the East Coast, but she's returned to California, the San Diego area, as we were just talking about, the SDMN, San Diego Monitor newspaper, which we just love, this San Diego Monitor News, I should say. So, Cheryl, how can folks, can they get this online? Do you have a place that you can send everybody to find out more, to set, to register, or anything
like that?
Yeah, they
can get it on there. Yeah, it's a mobile site, so you can get it on your mobile device, and you can go to the website, sdmonitornews.com. Yeah, our story content is very off the beat. I am very picky what our readers are exposed to. They're always are going to get a very avant-garde, a very different way of looking at things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be honest, I believe that's one of our impediments. We are so 1960s directed. We are so infused in the 1960s that to get, you know, especially African Americans the 60s and 70s, it's very hard to get us back into the present moment of who we are. And
exactly.
I tell them all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah, you think about it, African-Americans, all 46 million, the average age of an African-American in this country is 26 years old.
Isn't that?
And then
dealing with
the African diaspora, they're 19. So if you think about 26 and 19, then, you know, that's a lot of time that, you know, we've got to look at things differently.
We've got to look at things very
millennial. Yeah.
Yes.
And I think that could be one of our strengths, thinking
Absolutely.
About things in such a different way to get something. I have also another saying, you know, we want something we've never had. We've got to do something we've never done. We've got to think ways
exactly.
that we've never thought. And
exactly. Well, let me turn to probably I'm going to call it the elephant in the room, and that is the pandemic.
Okay.
Yes, and I know that's a topic and a half. That's a, you know, we'll probably have to add on 2 or 3 hours to cover this one. But what is your take when you look back? Because right now, as we go to the air with this particular broadcast today, we are more than what they're saying in terms of emerging and all of that. And what can you say looking back? What was the experience like in California and the hair biz part where you were? And California, to me, California is a very different, had a very different approach with all of that. But what's your take? You are living there.
Yeah.
Because of the weather,
oh, I think we made an adjustment very quickly because we could go outside very quickly. We were always outside, you know. And so I think that they adjusted well. I think African Americans did not adjust well because, of course, you know. And to me, let me just say this: the elephant in the room is not really quite the pandemic, from my perspective. The elephant in the room is that the fact that Black people are prone to be frightened, much more traumatized than our other racial counterparts. So we don't adjust well. We have the boogeyman. You know, everything's the boogeyman. for us, and our people secretly in our silos were saying, oh, stay in, you know, and that is not quite good for business. And
wow.
So if you are naturally afraid, you don't pivot. You're very slow to react. And you can imagine, Carrie, I was very avant-garde and had a different take on it, you know, because after I would probably say March of 2020, it was not a pandemic at that point. It was an epidemic in the United States, an epidemic in Brazil. It wasn't a pandemic at that point. Other world governments had contained it. And so that's what we keep saying. Like the rest of the world had our issues. No, the rest of the world, the continent of Africa barely is reaching 4,000 deaths. The whole 54 countries.
The whole continent,
that says,
right.
That's enormous if you think about it. And there's something quite not right with that. You know, within 50 to 100 to 200 miles, you know, from where we quote unquote say it began, I mean, they have less than maybe 300. And so it wasn't a pandemic long. It was an epidemic. And I think that because our news outlets, and speaking of the San Diego Monitor News, I just refuse to kind of put fuel on the fire and I didn't take, and I'm going to say this, you know, I didn't take any COVID money. I refused to because I can't say no, because you can't really stay.
Well, they were throwing it out there.
Yeah, they were.
they were throwing it out.
Let me just say this. And I refused to kind of have, and I think I did it once. And you know, Carrie, I just couldn't do it because one of the things, because it doesn't allow you to look at things objectively. And if we're going to have
black news,
and if we're going to be very neutral, you can't be involved in that kind of thing. And let me just say this, as our mother company, which is Beauty, I can afford to do that. And I understand that most papers needed that money to, you know, so, hey, and because that was digitized prior to 10 years ago, I pivoted very quickly to digital and still maintained my other advertisers. So, you know, 2020 was not, it did not affect me. Not economically.
That is amazing. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, because
and
during
so,
the census was going on at the same time. So that was very surprising.
Yeah, that's true.
Which
changed the game here in New York for us to a degree. I have to say, though, and looking out, so what are some of the, you know, when you look at the beauty industry, you know, how, in your opinion, has it affected the folks in the beauty industry? I mean, especially, like you said, in California, though, see, you guys were, remind me of Georgia, right after this pandemic was kind of declared, right? Georgia was like, okay, we're like literally about 2 weeks later. We're all in for business again, everybody. I mean, literally.
Yeah.
I remember having panel discussions on our broadcast here on the Hair Radio Morning Show in the year 2020. It was just strange, a very strange dynamic in different states.
Yeah.
And so the industry was very different, and then with and we've had the people from Barbicide and all these other folks on, and they scared the bejesus out of us with the discourse on television news, as you were kind of saying. It's almost surreal. So, so when you look at the beauty industry, will we make it? What do you think?
Well, you know, I don't even think it's that the salon. I think that we could have pivoted. That I also was involved in some technology and formulation in dealing with a disinfectant that covers you from all viruses 9.993.
Really?
And it protects you for 90 days. You don't even have to sanitize. Once you sanitize your
hands,
you know, you protect it. Yes. We have it in production. It has all of its OSHA and FDA passage. So I answered it in a very technological way. But here's the thing, Carrie. It's not about what's going on in the salon, per se, because black hair care professionalism is wired through the salon. But the industry is wired through the trade show. Once you took the trade show and you could not meet in the groves of 7,000 to 10,000 people, you decimated the ethnic hair care industry because the ethnic hair care industry is wired through the trade show. So now the expo, and now the festival, and now the trade shows, you can't meet. So how do you carry along something that is wired through the actual platforming, hairstyle, and trade show, and all these big, huge halls and auditoriums.
Exactly.
And interesting things. When you can't meet.
And I'm raising my hand right now.
Right. And,
really
you're devastated. Yeah. And so that means that hair, ethnic hair care, because the Garner Brother, as you know, it is over. The international show in New York is over. You can't meet.
Wow.
Those are too many people in one confined space, and now, you know, you're just trying to stay 6 feet apart, you know, and you got to, you know, that is a nightmare.
It was a show killer for sure.
And so the problem is
that.
Please
finish your thought. The problem is.
No. So the question and the challenge for black hair care and ethnic beauty is we needed to pivot long before this. And I have been telling show promoters for at least 5 years, pivot to the small conference and the more con kind of business model and create a different kind of gathering to where it's an invited list and it happens more often instead of once or twice a year. And so...
And this is what I speak to 1,000%. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, they act like I didn't, you know, say anything. So, you know, invite the formulators. You know what I mean? Invite, create a TED Talk style. Or there's so many other ways to bring smaller groups. Yeah.
Exactly. And to create those lanes that will support you and take you through these times. Now, Cheryl, I've got to say, there is one big story that we are revisiting here at the Hair Radio Morning Show. And this, not too long ago, but there was a huge story. Now, I'm telling you, it was the number one covered story, especially in the hair and beauty industry, but it had crossed over into mass media. And this was the story of the Gorilla Glue Girl who had put the glue in her hair, the Gorilla Glue, and she was rescued, so to speak, by a California doctor, Dr. Michael Obeng, who was a guest on our very show, on the Hair Radio Morning Show. He spoke to Hair Radio first about this this ordeal for this young woman and how he was able to remedy the situation. But let's start with your take on this, because we're talking about this again as we'll be checking in to see what's new and what's the latest that's going on. It's been a few months. Has her hair grown back? What happened? What's going on? So we will revisit it. But what's your take on this situation? I wish I could have seen your face when you heard this on the news.
You know that.
I wish I could have been a fly on the wall.
Yeah, you know it. And you know I'm always going to be honored with you, Carrie. And let me just say this, and I am in no way invalidating anybody. The doctor thing was to me was, you know, a little far out there. You know, it's so funny because the glue and here we go again. And this is me sticking up for my beauty and beauty professionals, because I am a hairstylist. For that particular act connected with a doctor, to me, you know, because at the end of the day, the glue in and of itself is not a medication. That's number one. Number two, it's not, it's in the store where a common person can purchase it. And for not a beauty professional to not be able to help her, and I won't even say be able to help her, right? Because what the medical professional used to unstick the stickiness of the solution, anybody could have done that. Because what he used to do that. Now, will you save the hair from the high content of what the effects because of that particular chemical that in that glue did it, you know, because we have to ask what was on the hair first. Was it relaxed?
Exactly.
Was it natural? You know, at the end of the day. So, and to me, because it probably was not really on her scalp, that the scalp hair is probably the hair that is going to obviously be the healthiest. I already know in terms of, you know, of course, we don't necessarily talk about it all the time, but I'm the only cosmetic trichologist in the world that deals with cosmetology-based hair loss on afro textures. But, you know, eventually that hair is going to be cut away from her body. Yeah. It's not going to be.
Wow.
It's not going to be. So, Cheryl, you know, I don't know. I don't know how much help he was. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, he. That's
Sean,
the thing.
I'm a little in the middle. Yeah, I'm a little in the middle with the doctor angle, you know, because eventually.
Well, you've got to be back on the show when he's here. So, because I would love for you to break it all down with Dr. Obing, who just seems like a nice gentleman and all. But, you know, there's a whole lot more to this story. There is. There's a great deal of this story. It really is.
Yeah.
And
I'm
just grateful that we were in the middle of it somewhere. I'm just grateful
at the end
there.
Of the day, you have to cover it. You know, if nothing is black, you know, black news and ethnic beauty news, that story was a prime example of it. Absolutely.
Yes. Well, I am honored. Again, we've been chatting with the amazing Cheryl Morrow. Hair royalty, you've been declared and named that for decades. We've been calling it that, hair royalty, right here on our broadcast today. I appreciate your take on it. I've always wanted to you know, when I hear some of these big stories and some of these big things, I always say, what in the world would Cheryl Morrow say? Really, what would you say about it? Because you always have interesting.
The moment I saw that, you know, because you know the moment I saw it, I was like, oh, God, here we go again. Why didn't she just end up at a salon? How did we get to the doctor?
Yeah.
I mean, that's like really weird, you know. But anyway.
Yes. Well, it's about education, and that's where you come in. Education. And what was that line earlier? If you're not informed, then the news don't matter.
If you're not informed, news doesn't matter. Yeah, you can't gossip with anybody if you're not really informed about what they're gossiping about. You know, you can't gossip.
I love it.
You know.
I love it.
That's it.
I totally agree. Well, Cheryl Morrow, now what's next for you? What's next for you?
I think that I am going to probably be peeling away from the publisher kind of role at San Diego Monitor News. The George Floyd thing kind of took me out. I think I wanted to be at the helm during that incident and in the 1 year anniversary and, you know, all of these things.
Well, were you one of those
coming
who
up.
Were you against the use of the word anniversary? I didn't understand that because anniversary means, you know, just that. it doesn't indicate or mean that it was, you know, party on a table per se. But I saw a lot of stuff online that said, oh, don't call it an anniversary. No media company call it an anniversary. It's not a celebration. So I said, well, I understand what I think what the person meant or their sentiment, but I don't think that I don't see what the harm of the word itself, anniversary. How do you weigh in, being a media company, Ms. Publisher of the San Diego Monitor News?
Oh,
how do you weigh in on that?
Well, you know, the wonderful thing that I got a call one day, and it was the first cousin of Mr. Floyd. Their mother are sisters, and he is stationed here in San Diego. And he grew up with him. And after, you know, experiencing that whole thing, you know, it really, you know, that is tomato, tomato, you know, anniversary, who cares?
Yeah.
You know, we
yeah.
know what, it, you know, it,
yeah.
you know what happened.
We and, know what it really means. Exactly.
You know, well, we get caught up in things of that nature. And I think that once we deal with our trauma about it, then we can clearly talk about preventing it. And that is very hard to get. And that's why I don't join a lot of black news outlets. I'm just,
the chatter,
you know, we're just
and
different.
All that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, we're just different.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, on this end of the world, we have a wonderful civil rights activist and founder of the People Alliance for Justice Advocates. His name is Reverend Shane Harris. You know, he's approaching it in terms of preventing and plucking out the next Derek Chauvin. It's not, you know, yours is one focus that people can focus on, but at the end of the day, we're not plucking out. I mean, he had 7 to 8 excessive forces on his record already, 19 years. Why didn't we understand that this guy was a problem? You know, so
exactly.
let's just focus
exactly.
on, so on our side of the world, we're choosing to think tank and focus on better policy in that regard from the incident. And my experience with Mr. Gary Jones, which is the cousin, he's in the military as well, you know, San Diego, that is, we're known for that. I think that, you know, it's you know, we can ring the bell. But, you know, if you listen to the recording, you know, it's
wow.
he's going to jail for fraud, which means that they were executioner, judge, and jury. Even just
yeah.
arriving on the scene. So we want to prevent
right.
that because there's something that happens before excessive force. And there is a disregard of the Constitution. And that is the problem. This is a problem when they approach you that you are outside of the rules. And why is, you know, I tell Black Lives Matter and the whole people, Black lives don't matter, won't matter until Black life matters. And so that
Ooh,
is what
okay.
happened before the incident.
Yeah. Yeah,
and once that happens,
wow.
that will, then when Black life matters, the way we, who we are in and of ourselves, when that matters to you, like it matters to you, you know, like your life and white life, Italian life, and, you know, when life matters, the way people live and how they move, their morals and their ethics and their ethos,
well,
that
Cheryl,
matters,
we have.
Then we will.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we have about mm-hmm. 60 seconds. I wanted to just to thank you. And is there anybody that you'd like to shout out to or pass along some well thoughts before we close out this morning?
Oh, just the whole ethnic beauty world. I think that we're all in it together, and we're going to make
yeah.
a change, bring some technology and innovation, and work with Carrie to
– Yes. Please.
Create this whole new gathering, this whole new way of doing things and expound on the legacies of the pioneers. Absolutely. I'm excited, Carrie.
Absolutely. Me too. I am. Well, as you've heard, we've been chatting today with the one and only Ms. Cheryl Morrow. Again, and I love that you've talked about the hair industry. I think that you brought a lot to that, you know, in making, informing the folks out there and creating your own discourse. Again, the San Diego Monitor News, you are a publisher. You're the daughter of Willie Morrow, 400 Years Without a Comb, and so much more he's accomplished. And you are continuing that legacy. So you talk about the generations, the subsequent generations, and where the money, where's the money? Well, I think we found it to this morning.
Yes.
Okay, Michelle Romero.
Thank you.
I think we found it. So look out for, yes, we'll look out for her documentary, folks. And stay with us. We've got a lot more this morning of the Hair Radio Morning Show to go. It's been my pleasure to have you, Cheryl.
Thanks again. Can't wait to come back. Thank you, Carrie.
So did you have a good return visit this morning, Jaimisha?
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Yes, I love the Hair Radio Show. I love. Very empowering. It gets me, you know, motivated in the morning to move forward and do what I do. So I love, like being here.
Oh, that is just awesome. Jaimisha has now again Wig Talk Wednesday morning, 7:30 Eastern, 6:30 Central Time Zone, right here where she's giving you the latest. And again, across the board, it's not your great grandma wig show, okay?
No.
A whole lot going on with wigs.
Did you know that the Hair Radio Show with Keri Hines is the longest-running radio broadcast on hair and beauty talk in the world? It's a broadcasting hair industry institution. Be a live guest on air and join our long list of amazing celebrities and hair and beauty industry luminaries who've all been on our show. Give our office team a call at 833-402-8882. Again, that's 833-402-8882. Or visit us online at hairradio.com. Because you haven't made it until you've made it to Hair Radio.
Time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Keri Hines.
All right, we're back live. Yes, you're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I am Keri Hines. It's Thursday morning, March 17th of 2022. And this is a very special broadcast. We're mid-show. It's about 7:14 in the morning Eastern Time, 6:14 for you guys out in the Central Time Zone. And wanted to just speak a little bit. This is the very first time we've ever done anything like this, which is a memorial to someone who was very dear to us at Hair Radio. Well, you guys know now how very important this gentleman was to us, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. Again, his name is David Babai. Now, it truly represents celebrity hairstylist. And that's what really caught my attention way back when we first chatted. And David, we're going to talk, we've got some memories to share. We've got some statements. We've got a statement from his actual publicist, who's a great friend to our show, Janice McCafferty. And we're going to get that on in just a bit, along with some music that I selected personally. I wanted to explain it because it kind of means something to me. It's by an artist who performed with, you know, the boss, Bruce Springsteen. His name is Clarence Clemons, and he did a song with an old-time popular song singer named Jackson Brown. It's called You're a Friend of Mine. And it was a big hit a long time ago, so for the kids, you won't necessarily know this, but I think you'll enjoy it and understand why I selected it to play at this time. And so we've got some other things along the way that we'll be chatting a little bit more. Also, we will be literally playing David Babai's words himself in one of his last interviews that he did with our show. Here at Hair Radio. It's exclusively aired across our network. We're going to get it on. And we're going to close out today with a moment of silence and on to a song by Aretha Franklin called Angel. And that today will be our memoriam tribute to super celebrity hairstylist David Bye, who touched our lives in a way that he probably was not as aware of. But we'll talk a little bit more about that. So I'm going to go ahead and get this on again. This is one of my favorite songs of all time, and for some reason, it just shouted out at me when I kind of think back about David and friendship and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, because unexpectedly, you find friends when you're not looking for friends. And I think this is something I think you'll get. Okay, stay with us after the song. We've got tributes that you don't want to miss for Mr. David Bye. Stay with us.
I have a very special tribute to share with you guys. We lost a very dear friend to the Hair Radio Morning Show, and I'm just finding out about this. This was back in September of 2021, and People Magazine did a big story on this. We're talking about David Babaj. Now, he was out in Beverly Hills, California, and David worked with everybody. In fact, when we had him on the show, he's been on our show a couple of times and did quite extensive interviews with us. And David was very sweet and kind and was very sharing and forthcoming and talked all about the blowout bar that he and Gwyneth had worked on. And he was a long, long time friend of actress Kate Hudson. And he joked with me on the air about, he didn't know who Kate was at the beginning. And he just knew that had found out she was Goldie's daughter, of course, Goldie Hawn. And so Kate Hudson, it's a huge story in People magazine, and I'm just really getting a chance to look at it. I'm going to just kind of give it to you guys what they had to share about David and People. And it says, Kate Hudson is mourning the death of one of her oldest friends. The Golden Globe winner, 42, posted a tribute to hairstylist David Babaj. Now, this was early Saturday, along with throwback photos of Babaj styling her hair and her kids' hair. 21 years of shenanigans and laughter, she wrote. My dear boo, I love you. So she wrote that on Instagram and in caption, and it also says, processing this loss is really sad and challenging. I will miss you terribly, forever and always. Now, the loss was felt by many who expressed their condolences in the comment section. God bless his soul, wrote Reese Witherspoon. And such a loss, Cindy Crawford added. Oh no, I'm so sorry, commented Rita Wilson, Paris Hilton, and Lea Michele. So they all commented with broken heart emojis. So this has been quite something else. Hudson collaborated with Babaj and their eco-friendly hair care line, David Babaj for Wild Aid. That was back in 2008. And she said they had a blast together, she told People, shooting the line's campaign in Africa with Babaj and the late legendary fashion photographer Peter Lindbergh. I'm just lucky to have him as my companion while I travel and work. It's also great collaborating with Kate, Babaj added. I adore her. She's my muse and inspiration. We get in trouble all the time. And it's a sentiment that he told us right here, personally, on the Hair Radio Morning Show. And for me, Carrie Hines, just getting a chance to know David through being on our broadcast, he was a very very caring soul. You could feel it. And I remember when we brought him to the show, he was so surprised to know anyone would care about him so much. But we did. We loved having him on the show. He had told us that he had lost so much weight, and we were just rooting him on, and he had fans through our broadcast as well. And so we loved him so much, we brought him back for a second interview and to follow up with him a couple of years later to share what he had been working on. And he was just kind, and I remember that. It was very interesting. We're going to see if we can get all of that on for you guys. We'll put it on our 24-hour network as well, and continue to celebrate the amazing, amazing David Babaj, my friend on radio and through the broadcast, and the friend to the Hair Radio Morning Show. We'll keep your legacy going.
A moment of silence.
Statement from Janice McCafferty, publicist for David Babaj. I met David over 20 years ago when he reached out to me for a styling product he wanted to use on his celebrity client. It wasn't like the normal phone call I was used to representing many leading brands. This call took on a deep connection. We spoke for hours about the beauty industry and his goals as a celebrity hairstylist, plus our families, pets, foods, and life in general. I was hooked and became his biggest fan. As David's career took off, I started to handle his public relations. This took on a magical journey. It was more like having a party with laughter and plenty of smiles when we spoke every day. I welcomed every call with him and would even start smiling when I saw his number on the caller ID, as he would always have a story to tell. David was one of a kind. His talents as a hairdresser, his ability to make everyone laugh, and his love for animals made him the most sought-after hairstylist in Hollywood. From red carpets, covers of major magazines, and the runways, David was in demand. His clientele included A-list celebrities, top models, and photographers, of course. But with all of this fame and recognition, David was very humble. He had never bragged or even thought he was a better hairstylist than someone else. Instead, he would play down everything so no one would think he was unapproachable. He made everyone feel comfortable around him. He was a joy, and how I loved him like a son.
You're listening to The Hair Radio Show. I'm Kerry Hines. We have a very special guest with us today. His name is David Babai, and he is the top celebrity stylist. David, welcome to Hair Radio.
Oh, thank you, Kerry. That was such a lovely introduction. I'm so excited to be on Hair Radio with you.
Well, we're glad to have you. Now, we want to, and of course, we're going to get into all of the wonderful names and drop those names of some of the celebrities that you have worked with, which is pretty much everybody in the industry, and we'll talk about that. But I want to go back to the beginning. I kind of love the story that I read, and it starts at, like, out in Paris, France, which is one of my favorite places. We'll talk about that, but tell me about that. Now, you were atop the Eiffel Tower, and, you know, kind of this was several years back, like 15 years ago, and you decided kind of like a different career path.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, you know, I got my master's in hotel and restaurant management, and I was working for a big company, and I was just so miserable with what I was doing, and I never realized, you know, after going to school for 4 years and then starting a career, that I could actually have a second career. And it was a family holiday. It was me, my mom, my dad, and my sister. And my sister took my dad shopping, and my mom and I, although I was born in London and had been to Europe a lot, we had never done the sightseeing thing. Later, my mom told me she wanted to spend time with me alone because she sensed there was something wrong. I was just in a really depressed mood, and I felt like, what am I going to do? I've already done the school thing. Did I make a bad decision and new career? So we're on top of the Eiffel Tower, and we're looking out, and I'm looking, like, you know, how beautiful it is, but still really down. And my mom said to me, what's wrong? What's going on? And I kind of broke down and said to her, you know, I don't like what I'm doing. I've been scared to tell you guys because, you know, we've spent so much money for school. And she said to me, she's like, you know, you're so young. You still have time to change. You know, why don't you go be a hairstylist, you know? And I was like, qu'est-ce que c'est? You know, in French.
Exactly.
Trying my French. And, you know, she said, you know, she goes, look, just because you've made a decision in life doesn't mean you can't change it, and it's okay. And I was scared my dad was going to, like, literally kill me, you know?
Flip out, right?
Hundreds of thousands of school and da-da-da, and I still hadn't paid my that back to them. So she's like, go to Vidal Sassoon, the academy. You know, my mom worked at Sassoon, you know, for 10 years and before she met my dad. So this was on a Monday, and there was a class starting on Friday, and we just started our holiday. She said to me, I'm going to help you. I called the school. I did the paperwork. She paid for the school again. And my dad and my sister had no clue. I changed my flight, left in the morning without my mom and without my dad knowing about it. because my mom's like, I'll deal with it. You know, flew back and started Vidal Sassoon. Yeah. And then later in my career, obviously my dad, I mean, just after that, he's like, I'm fine with it. Why didn't you tell me? I've always, you know, so it was kind of like weird.
Wow. Now, you went on to study in London and Los Angeles, if I'm understanding it correctly.
Yeah, I did educational classes in London and in Paris, and I started my career, wanting to get just to work at a salon. I literally was thinking, okay, I'm going to go from beauty school, do internship for 2 years at a beauty, like at a salon, and then work on the floor, and that completely didn't happen. I never worked at a salon. I did some work at a charity stuff, but, like, I don't know if you want to know, like, after beauty school, like 2 weeks after beauty school, a friend of mine said, do you want to cut this publicist's hair? And I was ready to cut anybody's hair. You know, when you're out of beauty school, you'll cut anything. You know, now if somebody asks me for a haircut, I'm like, no. So I did his hair, and his name is Brad Caffarelli, and I owe him a lot because he started my career. He was Kate Hudson and Goldie Hawns and Cameron Diaz and everybody's publicist. And I cut his hair, and I was so nervous, but I did a good job because I really didn't know what publicists did. I didn't know about covers. I didn't know how celebrities were done. None of that. I was a really bad into the thing. Cut his hair 2 weeks later with the Golden Globes. He called me, and he goes, do you want to do Kate Hudson's hair for the Golden Globes? And I was like, who's Kate Hudson? In my mind, because, again, really bad, you know? Uh-huh. And then she's Goldie Hawn's daughter. And I was like, Goldie Hawn? I get to meet Goldie Hawn? Like, that's all I cared about. Was like, I did Kate for the Golden Globes, and then Vogue named me the King of Curls. And my career just... And by the way, when I was doing Kate, I was reading the manual on the curling iron because in Sassoon they didn't teach you curling irons, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's when it started that bohemian wave, totally by accident.
Wow. Okay. So now you've done quite a bit since then. That chance cut in which you met the publicist, and it kind of opened the door to all of these wonderful magazines and these publications from around the world, like Vogue and Elle, InStyle, Allure, Glamour, Cosmopolitan, and so many, many others. But I think one of the things that I kind of noticed there and I thought was really interesting is that you were an editor at large, and certainly my French, let me just try, is it L'Officiel?
L'Officiel, yeah.
L'Officiel, okay, I like the way you say that. So tell us about that. How was that? Because you had to share your perspective on beauty trends with women around the world, so... How was that?
You know, this was, like, again, so early in my career. I mean, after doing hair for, like, maybe 2 years, I was approached by the magazine. And, again, I was not a good – I mean, I didn't know what I was doing at this point. I was totally winging it, you know. So, but I was really all of a sudden, I'm really A-type personality, so I became really consumed with hair and fashion. So I was approached by the magazine to be an editor-at-large. Now, I didn't even know what editor-at-large meant, but I was like, again, qu'est-ce que c'est? No problem, you know. And I do have a real passion for France and for Paris because obviously it was where my life changed. So I flew to Paris. They flew me to Paris and on Air France and put me up at the, what was it? I think it was at the Ritz. And I met with them, and I was like, what's going on? Like, you know, like, so I became editor at large, and I did, like, the covers with them, and I did trend sets of Hollywood and how fashion and celebrities work together. It was the most amazing experience, and I was there for, I think, almost 2 years, and I couldn't continue further because I was so busy, I couldn't meet with them and do the trends, or else I would have still, I'm still very dear friends with them, and I still do some stuff with them once in a while.
Wonderful. Now tell us about, and we are definitely going to certainly talk about more of these connections, these wonderful connections that you have, but just in general, is there anything that's jumping out trends-wise these days that you might want to share?
You know, I think that what I've learned is what I believe in. You know, I have this weird thing that I came up with on a plane when I was bored, and excuse me if I say it incorrectly, was, you know, poets had written about women, my philosophy on women, that poets had written about them, philosophers have pondered about them, you know, artists have drawn them. I am the man today. I've become the man today because of the women I've been around. You know, like, I look at myself as, you know, I admire women itself, and therefore translating trends and looks for them, I feel like is, you know, I don't think a woman should be a slave to her hair. I've always been like that. Even creating my own hair care line, I wanted things to be easy, and I wanted things to be sexy and beautiful, and I don't think anybody ever looks at someone and says, wow, that's an amazing blow dry, or like, you know, or like, God, that stiff updo is so amazing. You know, I think it's great to do those kinds of things, but I like women to look naturally beautiful, you know? So I think what's happening now is women are taking more control over it, and, you know, women work, have kids, have lives, have careers, everything. So things are more about loose and beautiful and sexy and natural for me, and that's what I will always continue doing, you know, with all the women I work with.
Perfect. Now what we all want to know about, we all want to know about, what is the life of a celebrity stylist? What is it really like when you have the most famous client in the world? David, tell us about that.
You know, it's a beautiful life, because my life is, my work is to play up. I play dress up every day. You know, I make women look pretty, you know, or like, I don't make them look pretty, I just do fun hair, you know. It's also very, very stressful, and, you know, because the world is not just judging them, they're judging what I've done to them, you know. So at points, sometimes, you know, you have an anxiety attack until the Oscars are over, or the Golden Globes, or the premieres, or whatever. And I think, I don't know who said it, but someone very smart said, you're as good as your last hairstyle. And that's how it is. Sometimes it's really stressful. And, you know, it's fun creating looks for Angelina Jolie for a movie, or, you know, Ryan Reynolds or Brad Pitt or Gwyneth or Scarlett or Uma or Kate Hudson, all the girls I've had the privilege to work with. But also you just think, okay, what's the next look I can come up with? You know, so it could be very, very stressful. And then there's days that you have that amazing, you know, you've got God working through you or whatever it is, and you just do everything is right, the synergy is right, and you just do the most amazing look that you feel is good, and you're just like, wow, I kind of do good hair, kind of a thing, yeah.
Wow. Well, listen, we want to tell all the folks out there about your current project and currently what you're working on. Now, I understand that it's a blow-dry bar.
Yeah, you know, about 4 months ago, Gwyneth Paltrow has been my client, was my second client. Kate Hudson was my first, Gwyneth was my second client I worked with, and I've known her forever, and I love her more than anything, because she's not only been a client, she's been a really dear friend in, you know, life's trials and tribulations, if I'm saying that right, with me, and so have most of my clients. And so she was, her and Tracy Anderson, they've worked together for a long time, and Tracy actually helped me lose 115 pounds.
Now, I want the folks out there to hear that again, and then I'll let you continue on with this story. Did you say 115 pounds?
115 pounds, and I'm 5'7". Could you
imagine?
Oh,
my gosh.
So,
wow.
I, you know what it is, I gained the weight because all I did was travel and room service
right.
And, you know.
Rich foods, yeah.
Rich food. Delicious. And stress, and, you know, I went from a size 30 waist to a size 44 waist in like a blink. And I tried everything. I tried, you know, everything you can imagine. And when Gwyneth's body from the Iron Man one first Iron Man when I did her, when everybody was like, oh my God, you know, and I was like, maybe I could try this, you know, and I started working out and I got a lot of motivation and not preaching, but more motivation. Hey, you're looking great or you're doing good. And I learned the different relationships between food and why you need it versus as a comfort, you know, and my friend's going through this weight thing right now, and I don't even tell her you need to lose weight. I'm like, you will hit a point where you will want to lose it yourself. It's your own personal journey, you know? So I lost the weight, and then Gwyneth called me. Why I say this is because it kind of all comes in a full circle. She goes, I'm opening this flagship Tracy Anderson Brentwood studio, you know, and we were going to do a blow-dry bar just for people to go in there and blow their own hair, but I want to do it with you. Would you be interested? And I was like, I've never owned a salon, never had the aspiration or the desire to open a salon. Every time I go into a salon, I'm like, I don't know how these guys do it. I mean, it's 10 people, 10 characters, personalities every day. How do they do this, you know? So I was like, okay, yes, yes, oh, my God, yes, I'll do it, not thinking how much work comes with it, because it's like, and by the way, we're opening in 2 months. So I had to hire staff, didn't know how to hire people, train people, and now we're actually doing salons all over the world together, you know? And it's, and you're the only first person I'm telling that to, you know?
Oh, did you guys hear that? Wonderful. Now hold it. Repeat that one more time, Dave.
Well, we've decided to open up blow-dry bars all over the world, and you guys are the first I'm saying it too. So I wasn't supposed to tell anybody, but you know, it's you, Carrie. I've got you.
Well, fans of the Hair Radio Show, you heard it right here first, and we love that. Now, speaking of Gwyneth Paltrow, first, we have to say we're all big fans of hers. And, you know, just recently being named as one of the, well, actually, the most beautiful woman. Yes, on the cover. You can't get any more beautiful than that. So we love her. We support her.
Oh,
and, so we just wanted to say, what is it like working with Gwyneth specifically? And then I want to hear a little bit more about this project.
Yeah, it's amazing. I don't know how to explain how, first of all, she's so encouraging and she is so brilliant and so fun and doesn't take herself serious and, like, you know, it's you know, she knows how to cook, and she did it because of specific reasons. She speaks fluent Spanish, Italian, French with beautiful accents and an amazing actress. And funny story about me and Gwyneth is when I was in the hotel industry, I was in Chicago, and I decided I wanted to go to the Oprah show because I had 3 days off. And I saw her when she was promoting Sliding Doors, and I thought, and I wasn't even in hair, I thought, wow, what a beautiful woman, you know, and ironically, I end up being her business partner and her hairstylist. But, you know, she's just such an amazing person, and she's such an amazing mother. I've never seen, like, I mean, she cares about her kids and is so present and a good friend, and, like, I could text her, email her anytime, whether I'm going through personal problems, and she'll give me great advice, and she's my muse, you know? So, amazing.
Well, thank you for sharing that.
Okay.
Now, I want to ask you, because this, now, that's in Brentwood, about the blow-dry bar that you guys are working with together on. That's out in Brentwood, California. And isn't that like a suburb of L.A.?
It is a suburb of L.A. It's, you know, Los Angeles has different areas like West Hollywood, Beverly Hills, Bel Air, you know, Century City, Glendale, where all over. This is Brentwood, which is kind of close to Beverly Hills, and it's really close to, it's a really great, it's almost like a little, it's not a village, but it's like this really cool community with just really cool, healthy people. When you're standing outside, you see people running all the time. I mean, all of L.A. is like that, but
right.
You can't. And just think, I was 115 pounds, and I worked with all these beautiful, skinny girls. So it's a really cool environment, yeah.
Well, listen, we're happy about this. Now, the blow-dry bar is open, and how's it coming along?
It was originally going to be just at that location only for members. Because, you know, when you're transforming your body, and it's a no-judgment kind of a place, you go in and you work out and you've got that bounce in your step, and Gwyneth wanted you to have that bounce in your hair, you know. So it is for members only, and when we first opened and when we announced it, there was a million press impressions within 24 hours, and we got over 10,000 phone calls and emails about making reservations, because it's the first time a celebrity, well, I don't call myself that, I hate it, but like a hairstylist that works with celebrities, and an actual celebrity, an Oscar winner, had opened a blow-dry bar together. So we had like over 10,000 reservations, and we're like, we're only for members. I was panicking, having anxiety attacks. So that's where we decided, you know, we want to make it affordable, have great trained staff, and open up other locations so we can, you know, have fun with other women coming in.
Sounds like you're doing just that.
Yeah.
Now, David, the product line, you mentioned it earlier. Wanted to talk a little bit about that. I understand it's for professionals only, and we have a lot of great salon professionals who are listening to us right now and friends of the Hair Radio Show. So tell us about your product line and what you're working on with that.
Yeah, like 7 years ago, I launched a first hair care line with Kate Hudson, and that was for... it was called David Babai for Wild Aid. It was just a project that Kate and I did because I wanted to do, and Kate supported me to bring awareness to wildlife conservation. I'm a real big animal activist. I've always been since I was a kid. And I'd learned from, actually Angelina Jolie about Wild Aid and wanting to make a difference because she had donated millions of dollars to them. And she said to me, why don't you start a hair care line? That's when I started it with Kate. We went to Africa, shot our ads, and, you know, we brought so much awareness, raised money, and, you know, that was specifically, it was like a two-year project, you know. And then, you know, once the line, you know, we sold the brand for Wild Aid, I'm so sorry, we decided to, you know, I took a break, not thinking I wanted to do another line because it is a lot of work, and I wanted performance, you know, because I'm a hairstylist. I've tried everything. You don't know the things people send me, and I could never find, so I'd become like this crazy scientist at home creating stuff for myself, you know, and when the second time around I was approached to do a hair care line, again, I wanted it sulfate-free, paraben-free, petrochemical-free, and none of the nasties, you know, I wanted performance, so I took science and nature and combined it together and developed a product that actually works. There's so many amazing products out there and amazing natural products that really for hairstylists don't give the performance. You know, as hairstylists, we have a specific amount of time to satisfy our clients' needs and yet get to our next client. So when developing this product, it took me 3 years of massive testing, and my thing is, my first one was tested on Kate Hudson, not on animals. My new one is tested on celebrities, not on animals. So I was able to test my entire range on so many different hair types and different hairstyles, and I made all of my products universal for every hair type, you know? Mm-hmm. And I still have, you know, recycled plastics. And, you know, I'm a small company, but I'm a growing company, and I feel like it's great that we can do these kind of healthier products. You know, as hairdressers, we're surrounded by hairsprays and products all day long, you know, for our entire career. And I was like, you know, and I have so many hairdresser friends that had gone through so many different health issues. And
right.
So I thought, okay, this is going to be something I can do. And it's been so well received. We launched it in Australia 6 months ago, and we're the number one selling product there. And I'm actually just, again, another little exclusive. Nobody knows about this. I launched it in the Brentwood studios, not for sale, just for people that work out in the showers and in the blow-dry bar, and now I'm going to launch exclusively globally with Goop, with Gwyneth Paltrow, you know, Gwyneth's site. So it'll go there, and then it'll eventually go into salons, and, you know, because she's so hands-on and everything that goes on Goop, she has to approve it before it does. So, you know, it's something that I want to keep professional. I want to keep for our hairdressers, you know?
Well, we are happy to have heard it right here first at the Hair Radio Show.
Thanks.
Now, when that when it's all out and you're ready to talk about it more, would you please come back and tell us more about that?
Yes. Are you kidding me? I would love to. You guys are so for sure.
Terrific. Well, listen, we want to thank you. But before we let you go, there's one last area, which it's still very close to me as well, personally. But I want to just ask you, I know that you're doing so many wonderful things, and many may not realize that you're also doing this, and this is why I want to talk about it, which is the Look Good, Feel Better charity. Would you mind taking telling us just a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, it's such an amazing organization. They've been around for so long, and they do such beautiful work. And you know, my focus is going to be a lot this year on that. I feel like, you know, looking good makes you feel great. You know, how many days have we all had bad hair days?
Yeah.
Or you know, going through different things. Where I really got into that was one of my dear friends, you know, and I don't want to get emotional because I always do. Her mother was going through chemo, and her mom's hair as a child, I remember, was like her pride and joy. And she was losing her hair, and I went over to, you know, shave her hair and give her a wig and, you know, all that stuff, and she just couldn't do it. And I love my hair. I mean, I'm a hairstylist, and if I have a bad hair day, it's like literally an emotional wreck for me. So I took the clippers and I shaved my head, and I said, look, it's that easy. And when I was shaving my head, the whole time I was thinking of Demi Moore in G.I. Jane. I was like,
oh yes.
I can't believe I'm doing this. I can't believe I'm doing this. But you know, I wanted her to feel like it was okay and that it'll come back. And you know, and this is not the important part right now,
right.
You know, and I love what they do. And, you know, I have different organizations I work with. Obviously, being an animal activist, I love working with Catherine Hagel with her mother, you know, spay and neuter programs. And there's so many things that I'm interested in. And luckily, I've been fortunate to have such amazing celebrity clients that have helped me express this to everyone. So the more I can do, the better I feel. It's really a selfish thing that I do. And I don't really talk about it a lot, but it's a very selfish thing I do, and it makes me feel good. So why not?
Well, listen, you are really a living example, and we are just so honored. We can't say it enough. And
thank you.
So we want folks, maybe it would be a good suggestion to tell them how they can find out more about you. Your website, what is the name of your website?
They can go to davidbabaii, davidbabaii.com.au, which is my Australian one, which will be launching everywhere. And I'm with Tracy Mattingly Agency and obviously Janice McCafferty, my publicist, who I love, who's been my publicist for my entire career.
Yes.
But, you know, one thing I just want to say to, I think, all of your amazing listeners is, you know, if you stand strong and you stand together, you can do whatever you want. And there's so many other hairdressers out there that are so much better than me. And I get Facebook messages from all of them, you know, and I love it. You know, I love that you guys are following me and wanting to do what I do. And just don't give up. You know, it'll happen. Just do what you do. Keep your artistic talents there.
On that note, thank you.
Thank you.
Stay with us.
Are we there?
That was David Babaii in his own words. The late David Babaii. This is Carrie Hines. It's Thursday morning, March 17th of 2022. It's about a little before 8 o'clock Eastern Time, 7 o'clock Central. We had on the memorial, radio memorial, which was the very first time we've ever done anything like this on the Hair Radio Morning Show. David, in an exclusive interview with us, way back when he first really was working with Gwyneth Paltrow. Of course, you guys know her. She's won an Oscar. And was on People magazine as the, guess, one of the sexiest women or what have you, most beautiful women, I think it was. And he talked about all of his work with Kate Hudson and
and so many others, like too many to list, really. But his story was very moving. He just mentioned his publicist, Janice McCafferty. So here's the statement. Here is the actual statement that I have for you guys directly from his publicist. In her own words, Janice McCafferty had all of this to say, and I just wanted to go ahead and get it on for everybody because this is really, it's been something that has been shocking to find out, to be quite frank. And I think you guys can see or hear just how much his words meant to us. So let's go ahead and get this on from the amazing Janice, who could not really bring herself to speak. So I'm reading the statement for her. Take a listen. Statement from Janice McCafferty, publicist for David Babai. I met David over 20 years ago when he reached out to me for a styling product he wanted to use on his celebrity client. It wasn't like the normal phone call I was used to representing many leading brands. This call took on a deep connection. We spoke for hours about the beauty industry and his goals as a celebrity hairstylist, plus our families, pets, foods, and life in general. I was hooked and became his biggest fan. As David's career took off, I started to handle his public relations. This took on a magical journey. It was more like having a party with laughter and plenty of smiles when we spoke every day. I welcomed every call with him and would even start smiling when I saw his number on the caller ID, as he would always have a story to tell. David was one of a kind. His talents as a hairdresser, his ability to make everyone laugh, and his love for animals made him the most sought-after hairstylist in Hollywood. From red carpets, covers of major magazines, and the runways, David was in demand. His clientele included A-list celebrities, top models, and photographers, of course. But with all of this fame and recognition, David was very humble. He had never bragged or even thought he was a better hairstylist than someone else. Instead, he would play down everything so no one would think he was unapproachable. He made everyone feel comfortable around him. He was a joy, and how I loved him like a son.
I got a call the other day. It was my sister Carolyn saying, Aretha, come by when you can. I've got something that I want to say. When I got there, she said, you know, rather than go through a long, drawn-out thing, I think the melody on the box will help me explain. Gotta find me an angel. Fly away, gotta find me an angel, ooh, and set me free. My heart's without a home. I don't want to be alone. I gotta find me an angel.
Did you know that the Hair Radio Show with Terry Hines is the longest-running radio broadcast on hair and beauty talk in the world? It's a broadcasting hair industry institution. Be a live guest on air and join our long list of amazing celebrities and hair and beauty industry luminaries who've all been on our show. Give our office team a call at 833-402-8882. Again, that's 833-402-8882. Or visit us online at hairradio.com. Because you haven't made it until you've made it to Hair Radio.
All right, you're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Kerry Hines. Now, I have a very, very special guest joining us today from the world of fashion. And boy, oh boy, does he have a story to share this morning on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Okay, let's bring to the line Mr. Nicholas Stiles. Nicholas, good morning and welcome. Yes, welcome to the broadcast. Okay, I want to jump. Yes, it's my pleasure. And listen, I want to jump right on in to this. This is, to me, a very big, big story. It's one that has not, that I hadn't heard about. I want to start here. You are, you had been working with a legendary music artist. You were hired to work closely and be an assistant to this legendary music artist. And shortly thereafter, the music artist passes away.
Right.
So I want to get the story with how all of this came to be. You know, the entire story. I think we want to tell this. But first, let's kind of go back a little bit. Now, you are, where are you from, Nicholas? Where were you born? Where were you raised? That wonderful good stuff. What can you tell us this morning?
Lorain, Ohio. From Lorain, Ohio, born Lorain, Ohio, raised in Lorain, Ohio. That's actually where I live right now, because I've been back to Ohio.
Okay. And that's near the Cleveland area.
Yes, about a good maybe 30 minutes from downtown Cleveland.
All right. So now this person, this superstar, if you will, let's just go ahead and put it on out there. We're talking about the late Mary Wilson. You guys know her from Supreme's fame. She's been, you know, forever immortalized as far as we're concerned with her incredible music talent. And so we've got to go back. Let's start at the beginning. How did you find out, how did this come to be where you were hired on as an assistant for the great Mary Wilson?
Well, then if we're going to talk about that, we have to go back even further.
All right.
2018. Actually, I think we should go back even further than 2018. When I was about eight years old, I was watching PBS, and they were doing a telethon to sell DVDs for the Ed Sullivan Show. And I honestly didn't know who the Supremes were. I knew the name Diana Ross, but I didn't know who the Supremes were. So it was, you know, I'm watching this little program that they were doing to raise money for the station and sell these DVDs. And the Supremes come on, and they're wearing these baby blue sequin fish scale halter neck dresses. And what made me fall in love with them is their dresses. So then I started, you know, going on the internet, looking them up, and I found, you know, more videos of them and more. I found that they had more dresses and more sequins and beads. So then I started looking up who they were individually and looking at their individual stories, not knowing that there was a connection between Supremes and Dreamgirls at the time. And well, until later on when I looked it up and discovered more of like Florence Ballard's story, and they compared it to Effie White. From there, sorry. Okay. I didn't know if you were going to say something. But from there, I had always had a dream of being a fashion designer. So when I discovered the Supremes, it kind of like felt like I found my muse of what I wanted to design. Because I've always had this idea of glamorous stuff, glamorous clothes, but I never had a face to put to it, if that makes sense. So when I discovered the Supremes, they became the face to my designs.
All of the glitter and the glamorous stage presence and the dancing and singing and those amazing songs. They have like a billion songs. And wow, okay. So you fell in love with them at that point, never dreaming that you'd be working for one of them.
Well, in 2015, December 2015, my grandmother, Faye, died. And one of the things she always encouraged was my like liking for Motown. She had a bunch of records because that was her period of growing up,
right,
the 60s. So she had a bunch of records, and she'd play the records, and we would listen to the records. She'd tell me, like, oh, I remember doing this or doing this to this song. And I remember she tried to get us a tour of the Motown Museum. She died before that happened. But she did, one thing she did say is kind of, I guess, a coincidence. Everything she said happened, but it didn't happen exactly how she said it, because what she said was, you're going to meet Diana Ross, and you're going to become close to her, work with her, do all these different things. And everything she said happened, was going to happen with Diana Ross, happened with Mary Wilson.
Wow. But she had that vision. And quite often, when you get those visions, they, to me, they happen, but it may not be exactly, you know, what that person had seen. But that is amazing. So that was the beginning, and quite possibly planted in your mind as well. And it could have started you on that road and path.
A little bit. No, definitely. Well, Mary and Diana are my favorite Supremes. And I remember every year Diana would come to Ohio, I would try to go see her. Something would always happen. One time, so whether the tickets sold out before I could buy the tickets, or I wasn't old enough to get into a venue, because most of the time she would come to Cleveland, would be at one of the casinos, so they didn't allow anyone who wasn't over 21 in the casino.
Right.
So there was one time I had everything ready. I was going to go to Vegas to go see Diana Ross. And this was a month before the pandemic happened. I was, the week before my flight, who was supposed to leave, everything got shut down. So it kind of felt like I'm never going to see this woman. So just kind of like a thing of it's never going to happen. But by this time, I was already in contact with Mary Wilson. January of 2018, after a phone conversation, we had never met in person before. We talked on the phone, and I had.
Well, how did she? How did you find? Did you see something on the internet that she was looking for an assistant, or how did that?
No.
How did she even know that you existed?
Well, she didn't. I don't think she knew. Well, I don't know if she knew I existed or not. But I will say, when I told her who I was, she acted as if she knew who I was already. So it was never of like it was never a question of how you got my phone number or who are you, you know, anything like that. But how I got her phone number was her hairstylist. Her name is Diana. Definitely. Her hairstylist posted their text messages on Facebook and accidentally, well, I guess didn't realize that she posted the text messages and had her number at the top of the
page.
And so I'm like, this is Mary Wilson. I knew who Diana was because a lot of the Supremes fans are connected with each other, so we all kind of know each other in one way or another. And I knew who Diana was because she's been talked about and she talked about working for Mary. So when I saw it, I'm like, that's not really Mary. It's Mary's phone number. It's like, that's too easy. Like, this is no way that I have this woman's number. So I text the number and I said, Merry Christmas. This was obviously, you know, Christmas. And I said, Merry Christmas, because that's the day I found it, was on Christmas. And she replied back, Merry Christmas. I don't know who this is, but happy holidays to you and your family, something like that. And then it said, Touch MW. And from her Facebook post and her Twitter post, she'd always use that as her signature at the end of her statuses, Touch MW. So I'm like, no, this really isn't her. I said, I don't think it's really her. So I got curious, and I texted the number again. This was January, though. And I texted and said, hey, I was just wondering, I'm starting a lip gloss line, and I was wondering if you would be interested in being a sampler for me. And she responded back, sure, call me. So me waiting to, you know, because I'm nervous, obviously, because I'm like, I don't know if it's really going to be her or not. So when I called, I heard her voice, and I said, wow, this is really Mary Wilson. So we talked on the phone, and like I said, never once asked how you got my phone number. The only thing she asked me was, what's my name and where am I from? That's all she asked. But she never asked how I got her phone number, you know, what was my reasoning for calling her. She was just completely polite, kind of as if we knew each other all this time.
Very kind.
Yeah. Opening, welcoming, and friendly. So, kind of put me at ease, too, because...
Yeah.
At the end of the conversation, she states that, you know, I can't help you financially with, you know, your business, but I can be a mentor if that's something that you're interested in. And I said, yeah, I actually, honestly, only wanted you to be a tester. Or just, like, sample it and post about it, take pictures wearing it and saying that you like the product if you did like it. I honestly wasn't contacting you for money. And she said, okay. She said, well, yeah, if you want a mentor, I can help guide you in the direction business-wise of where you want to be. So I said, okay. And we went from there. Like, that was January.
Amazing. Wow.
I ran a Supreme
How did you
club.
Feel? Were you not just overjoyed? Or you,
yeah,
weren't you overjoyed? And yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So now you were still out in Cleveland at that point.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lorraine, yes.
Okay, right. I'm sorry. Yes, of course. In Ohio. Safely say Ohio. But now where was Mary at that point?
Vegas. Either Vegas or in L.A. No, I'm sorry. She was in L.A. because the address she sent me when we got off the phone was an L.A. address.
Okay.
She was in L.A. at the time.
Okay, got it. Wow. Okay. So how did the conversation, okay, great. She is friendly. She is kind. You kind of started that connection. She offered to mentor, to be a mentor, which is amazing all by itself. But you're still out there. How did that conversation evolve to you becoming her assistant, though?
Well, I honestly, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't think she needed an assistant. I think what it was is that she more so just wanted someone to be with her or someone around her. Because what she told me was, she hasn't really had anyone creative on her team. And when I say creative, I don't mean like, you know, creative with ideas, creative with, you know, actual like artistic skills, things like that. Hair, makeup, I can do hair, I can do makeup. So all of that is kind of what she was looking for more so. But I also feel like she wishes also, whether she knew she was at the end or not, maybe she just wanted someone to be there with her. Because when I was over there, I never did any, honestly, never did any work. I sent maybe a few emails, looked up a few things.
You're saying when you travel, when you were over there, so when you traveled from Ohio out to Vegas, and that's where she had come, apparently left that L.A. Address and went over to Vegas. Okay.
Yeah, home
and
for
so
her is Vegas.
Home for, okay, so that's where she lived. That was her home. She was based out in Las Vegas, Nevada. And so so you went out there a while ago to meet up and all of that. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yes.
Okay, so
in November of 2021.
Uh-huh. Oh, it's been a long time. Okay.
Yes, November 2021, she said, I need the system. I wish you were here in Vegas. I'd hire you full time. And I said, well, in my head, I didn't respond to the email like this. I said, in my head, well, I can make that happen.
I'm telling you, I would have been like, somebody's at your door. That's me. I'm at the door. I would have jumped out the window and been there in 2 seconds. Of course. The great Mary Wilson.
It was 2 seconds. I had nothing planned, nothing saved. I had, when I left Vegas, I had $200 and a plane ticket and a suitcase full of clothes.
Okay. And that's plenty.
Yep. That was all I needed, because I knew a dream of mine had came true. So I didn't really care about anything else, honestly.
I didn't
care about what she was paying me. I would have did it for free, honestly. I didn't care about what she was paying me. I didn't care about anything. Nothing of that was in my head. At that moment, and even once I got there, at that moment, only thing that was on my mind was, I am sitting in front of someone I look up to almost all my life.
Wow. Let me just take a moment to bring everybody up to speed. Folks out there, if you are just joining us, you're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now, we have a very, very special guest who is with us telling really a remarkable story that he has lived. The personal assistant to one of the greatest entertainers of, you know, for the generations that have passed. We're talking about Mary Wilson of the Supremes. And I have to say, the young man is Nicholas Stiles. He, in his own right, is a creator. Well, they call now, you know, a creative. He is doing all these amazing things that we're going to talk about. And he's kind of bringing us along in this great story of first meeting Miss Wilson and, of course, discovering a passion for the Supremes and following his grandmother's great premonition that he one day would meet a Supreme, and so it has happened. I have to say, this story, Nicholas, is just unreal. It's unreal. It really is. And you're just
honestly
getting started. And it's unreal, yes.
And honestly, tell people the story, whether I'm doing an interview or talking to someone, a friend or a family member, or just talking to someone who doesn't really know the story. It kind of feels like I'm telling a dream, not really a real story. Or I'm telling something that you would hear about in a book or in a movie.
Absolutely.
Not something that really just happened to someone who, I guess you could say, dared to dream.
Well, she's a music icon. She's a music icon. So now, we were at the point where you went out to Vegas, the first meeting. What happened? Who picked who up? How did you connect? You know, did she show up at the at McCarran in Las Vegas at the airport and drive you from there? Did she send the car or Uber or what? Oh, that was not your first
meeting. No, that was our first meeting in Vegas, though. But she came to Cleveland the same year that we met over the phone. She came to Cleveland, and that was our first time meeting in person. And then she also came to Detroit that following year, and she was hosting a party, and I had drove to Detroit for the party. Because Detroit, to me, is only 2 hours.
It's not so far, right, and she was close by. By that time, you guys had gotten close.
Yes.
Okay.
She was already my mentor. We were talking, you know, on the phone, not every day, or maybe like every other month or something like that. And,
you stayed
like
in contact.
Yeah.
Okay.
She would email me to check in, talk to her about me being depressed, and she had to check in and see how I was doing and things like that.
Awesome. Now, what about that first meeting, though, when she came to Cleveland? What did you, I mean, were you super excited? Did she look like you believed she would? Or how did you guys, apparently you clicked.
Well, how that happened was my birthday is August 31st, so she came in September of that year. And I had knew she was coming because I kept track of all of her tour dates so that I could post them on the fan page that I have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was coming to certain cities. I'd say, well, hey, Mary's coming to this city, or and she'll be at this place, or whatever. So when I saw she was coming to Cleveland, I looked it up and saw that it was only $15 to get in. I'm like, Cleveland, it's only $15, and I bought my ticket instantly. So I remember my mom called me. Friends text me and tagged me in different posts on Facebook and Instagram, like, you know Mary Wilson's coming to Cleveland, right? I'm like, you already know, I already know this. I've been picking up my outfit for a month now. So the night before she came, I called her because I was unsure of like what type of event this was, because as we got closer to the event, the venue added more information about the event. And I wanted to know what was it for myself, like I should dress up for. So it was also at a museum. So it was like, so I asked, should I dress up? Should I, you know, come casual? You know, what should I expect? And she was telling me, you know, don't worry about it. It's a, you know, casual event, so you don't have to dress up or anything like that. Well, I guess I should have thought when someone older says casual, they mean more like business casual. Because I came in there with leggings and a flannel wrapped around my waist. And everyone has suits on and...
Right. Oh, don't you feel like you just want to melt into the ground?
Yes. Yes. I'm like, oh, my God. Because I had a suit picked out.
Right.
Was, you know, since she said it isn't, you know, I don't have to dress up. I mean, I'm not going to dress up.
Yes. Well, you know what you learned? You absolutely learned that day the difference between casual and business casual. Believe
right.
me. And that's a lesson a lot of folks don't know. But in a way, it made you stand out also and
mm-hmm.
express your style to a big degree.
No, it definitely did. And it did for two reasons. So when she walked out from the back of the museum, she looked around the room. I told her I was coming, so she looked around the room. We never saw. Well, I knew what she looked like. She didn't know what I looked like. So she looked around the room and she didn't see. I guess she was looking for me. I guess. So she looked. Me and her made eye contact. She smiled and she, you know, started looking around the room again. And then she looked back at me again. She said, "Are you Nick?" And I said, "Yeah." And then she had this big smile. She was like, well, come here. So she, we kind of had like an awkward moment where she held her hand out. I held my arms out to give, she held her hand out to shake my hand. I held my arms out to hug her. And then she held her arms out to hug me. I held my hand out to shake her hand. So it was kind of like a back and forth for us. So we just ended up shaking Jen's hand. And then she said, look what I have on. And she pointed to her lips and it was a lipstick that I had made for her. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't talk. And she started laughing. And she said, it's okay. She said, I'm sure you'll be more settled after the program. So after the show, we'll talk. So she gets on. It's like a live Q&A she did, a live interview. And the lady who's interviewing her asked her, does she mentor? Because they were talking about Maxine Powell and all the other mentors that her and the Supremes had at Motown. So she said, I don't really call it mentoring, more just giving guidance to younger fans. But if you see the young man sitting right there in the front row, I guess you could say I mentor him. He makes lip glosses and lipsticks, and that's how we became connected. So now everybody's looking at me like, oh, you know Mary?
Like, who are you? Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Wow.
So, that was the first time we met.
Amazing. That is amazing. So from there, you go back to, she came out to Cleveland, so you're already near your home, not too far from Cleveland. So so that was that. And as you mentioned, you guys stayed in touch over the months and all of that. And at this point, she's your mentor. You're the mentee. And now your friends, what does your family think of you? I mean, because you have to look at it this way also, Nicholas. You're from a different generation, totally different parts of the spectrum when it comes to generations. Did people think you have like an old spirit or any of those kinds of things? Were you teased about being connected to some legendary artist? So how did that play in your head? And your friends, what do your friends think about this?
All my life I felt like an old soul, or I was called an old soul. For example, I remember I was younger, and there was a birthday party. It was, of course, a kid's birthday party I was invited to. Everybody, was wearing sneakers and jeans, maybe, and I wore dress pants and Stacy Adams shoes. And everybody was looking at me like, why do you have church clothes on? Because it's what I felt comfortable in.
Wow. And even your communication style, it feels like I'm talking to more of a contemporary age-wise, really. But that is just amazing. You put folks at ease, and we're going to talk about that. So, which I imagine went over very well with Mary Wilson. So, tell me about that.
It definitely got critiqued one of the days that I was at her house. So, it was wash day, and I only had this bodysuit that I had bought, a jumpsuit I bought. It was a tight jumpsuit, and I had wore a shirt over it because I wore it as kind of like pants, so I like wore like a sweater over it to make it look like it was pants and shirt. And the jumpsuit was really tight. So she opens the door, and she goes, hot. And she stops and looks me up and down and just moves out the way and kind of like just lets me in, doesn't say anything. And the whole time, I'm like, well, I don't know what I did, because she just keeps making these faces at me. So I'm like, either she doesn't like me or something wrong with my outfit. I'm like, well, I don't know. So it kind of made me awkward, because she didn't say much to me like she usually would. So the next day, I come over and like I said, it's wash day, so I don't have anything but like jogging pants that were clean. And I wore the jogging pants that I had over to her house, and she goes, these pants, the first thing she says, these pants are a lot better than the ones you wore the last time.
Uh-huh.
And I said, you said you didn't say anything, but you kept making these faces. And I wasn't going to say anything if you weren't, but since you did. She said, I was making faces. And I said, yeah, you're making quite a few faces. And she's like, I'm sorry. And I was like, no, it's fine. It was actually kind of funny. And she's like, my thing is, when you have a big, and she stopped. Is that a big, and then there's this pause, a big behind. You don't wear tight pants. I said, oh. She said, yeah. She said, I don't want to be offensive or anything, but, you know, you just, it's not flattering. Unless it's the kind of attention you want. I said, I understand. And she was like, well.
That's great. That is great advice that I will never unhear. That's great advice, I think. How did you take that?
Well, once again, it was one of those things that made me feel more comfortable around her. Because it was like I was home.
And she always seemed to speak her mind on television interviews.
Yeah. Definitely.
Now, at this point, I wanted to ask you, Nicholas, and again, if you guys are just joining us, I'm speaking with a very special guest on the Hair Radio Morning Show. It's a very, very special broadcast. We have welcomed the last assistant of singing superstar, the legendary icon, Miss Mary Wilson of the Supremes. Nicholas Stiles is his name, and he's joining us today with this amazing story that you don't want to miss one part of, believe me. I've never heard anything quite like it. Now, I wanted to ask you, during some of these meetings, you guys met, she came out to Cleveland, you guys met in Detroit, you stayed in touch over the months. The friendship was growing, the mentoring was going on. Was there ever a point that she shared details of her journey as a Supreme with you, or did she ever talk about Diana? I mean, we want to know these things. Did she ever mention Diana Ross to you?
If you are looking for anything shady, no. But she definitely knows Diana's name. And I want to say this first. There's not one person in this world who I can't stand that I'll have pictures of in my house, hang up on my wall, or don't like or dislike. And she had paintings that she purchased of Diana by herself hanged on her wall.
Wow.
So, well, she had pictures of all of them, her, Diana, and Florence, but I'm just saying, like, I wouldn't have pictures of a person I disliked or anything like that on my wall.
Right. Right.
So,
did you get the feeling that she did not like Diana?
No, never, actually. Never felt that way at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me let you go ahead. What did she tell you? Did she call you to the side and say, listen, let me give you the real story? Did she talk about Berry Gordy and Motown and all that?
I will say this. Mary Wilson, the Supreme, and Mary Wilson, I guess they Auntie Mary, were two different people. When I was around her or talked to her on the phone, it kind of was like, I was talking to just Mary Wilson, the person, not the Supreme. So when she's telling me different stories of her youth, it's kind of just like a regular older person telling you about the good old days. But her stories of Diana were few. There was only like two or three, as she told me, that had Diana in it. And it wasn't like, let me tell you the key. It was more of like, I asked her a question, and, for example, Wilson Pickett, I had asked her a question about him, and she was telling me about a documentary they had together called Only the Strong Survive, if I'm not mistaken. It was Wilson Pickett's documentary, Mary Wilson, Carla Thomas, and Rufus Thomas. And the reason why Wilson Pickett's name I came up with because I was asking her about Carla Thomas. Carla Thomas actually is a family friend. Rufus Thomas and Carl Thomas are family friends. And I was asking her about them. But she was telling me, she's like, I remember when we did this show, this interview, and Wilson Pickett, picked up the story about us back in the day. And I said, is this a story about the car ride? And she said, yeah, you know exactly what we're talking about. So the story was, the story goes, Wilson Pickett said, we'd have Marion Florence sit in the front and Diana sit all the way in the back with her head down because she was so ugly. And Mary was like, everyone started laughing, and it made me feel awkward because it really wasn't funny, but it was just like, now I'm in this space because we were already going through our own little thing publicly at the time. So for him to say that, with me sitting right next to him, made me look bad, or something made me look bad. And she was like, I just hope that she didn't see that and think like, oh, there she goes again. So that was one thing she said.
Interesting. Wow.
But more of the stories were about Florence, if anything.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, what did she share about Florence? I mean, that is, to me, a huge, huge... Florence was the whole, kind of the impetus for the whole Dreamgirls movie, really.
Right.
So what can you tell us that she shared?
Well, what she said was, I had mentioned something about... Well, she mentioned something about my weight. And I said, I'm going to do what Florence is going to tell y'all. It may be in, but honey, fat is where it's at. And she started laughing, and she said, Florence, she sure was a character. And I said, I wish I could have met her. And she said, who? Diane? And I said, no. I said, well, I want to meet her too. But I said, no, Florence. And she said, oh, no, she was definitely somebody you would like. She was pressing for it like it is. Always.
And she called Diana Ross Diane always. Every TV interview I've ever seen, I've never seen her call Diana Ross Diana. She seemed to always call her Diane.
And what she told me wasn't about that particular situation, though. Well, her calling Diana Diane. It was about someone else. I can't remember who. Oh, Muhammad Ali. So. She had said he would get mad at her for calling him Cassius. Because she was like, that's what I met him
as. Yes.
And they always
Cassius Clay,
him.
Yes.
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 So when he changed his name to Muhammad, it was like, hey, Cassius. And he's like, Mary, stop calling me that.
Right. Wow. So Mary had a lot of famous friends, I imagine. Like that legendary fighter, Muhammad Ali, originally, you know, first start out Cassius Clay, of course. So did you get a chance to talk to her about some of these superstar collaborations and some of the things, and how did that, what might come to mind, like some of the things that she, because you guys were going to start working on projects, and I can't wait to talk to you about what were some of the things that she wanted to, or that you guys started working on together?
Well, I couldn't say this. We didn't start working on anything at the moment. What she was more so doing was training me. She kept saying that, I know what you want to do with your career. And she said, I know what you're going to do with your career and what you're going to do with your future, but I want to prepare you for it. And I'm going to get to that later. Because you know how you said about my grandma, how she made this happen with her dream? Or her vision, I feel like Mary knew something I didn't know. And I'll say that later on.
Yes.
But, one of the stories she told me, it was the first night I was with her. And we had went out to dinner. She said, well, what do you want to eat? And I said, I'm open to anything. I honestly have no reservations on anything. So she said, well, what about Thai or Japanese? And I said, I've never had either.
So you know that Japanese food? I said, So I said, well, I'm probably going to go to this Japanese restaurant I really liked. So we went to this Japanese restaurant. When we're sitting there, and she ordered, you know, she's like, well, you ever had sushi? And I said, no, just raw fish makes me uncomfortable, the idea of it. And she laughed, and she said, well, they have cooked sushi also. I said, okay, I'll try that. So she got me a thing to tempura sushi and some type of, like, vegetable sushi. So she got me both of them to try. And then she gave me a piece of her sushi also to try her sushi. I can't remember what she had. And we're just sitting there talking. And she slides me a $100 bill, and she says, well, this is your, you know, first payment or whatever. It really wasn't a payment. It was more so just to make sure I had got around the city. And I had, you know, some money in the city until I had got paid. So we're sitting
there. It sounds like you were just excited to be in the mix of things.
Yes, and I just was in awe. Like, I'm trying to eat my food, and I just noticed little things about her that we had in common. Like, I'm sitting there. I mean, I hate when I'm sitting in front of someone and I'm chewing my food so I cover my mouth. That's the same. She did the same thing. She pulled her bank card out to pay, and we had the same bank. And I said, well, you have Bank of America? And she said, yeah, I have Bank of America. She said, and I said, well, that's the same bank I have. She said, they're a really good bank. I said, I wouldn't use them for business, though, but they're a really good bank to have. So, you know.
Wow.
That was something that we had connected on. So I'm just, like, sitting there just kind of, like, in shock. Like, I couldn't even eat my food because I just was in shock.
And well, you were sitting with a real-life dream girl.
Yes. And I said, I'm sorry. I don't want to sound like I am one of these excited fans, but I have to say this. This is so surreal for me because I thought I've dreamed about since I was a kid, and it actually happening. I'm sitting here eating sushi with Mary Wilson. And she got it laughing.
Wow.
She covered her mouth while she was chewing. And she swallowed, and she goes, well, you know, I understand. That's all she said. And then I had asked her, I said, well, is there any celebrity that you had ever been around that you just felt starstruck around, whether it was the first time meeting or whatever? And she said, only one celebrity. She said, this celebrity, from the first time they met in the 60s to the day they passed away, I want to say that she...
Elvis Presley.
And
oh, no.
In the early 70s.
Ella Fitzgerald? Who?
One more guess, and I'll tell you.
Oh, okay. Let's see. You said it was a female back in the 60s.
Female actress, singer. Yes.
The only one I could think of was Judy Garland.
Mm-mm.
Okay, I give
her. She passed away in the, I want to say, in the 2000s.
She passed away in the 2000s. Diane Carroll, maybe?
Mm-mm.
Who?
Lena Horne.
Lena, oh, that should have been one of the top of my list. Yeah, of course. Lena Horne, yeah, she fits the bill. She would make me nervous, you know. Absolutely. Lena Horne, another legend. We're talking about, you know, just Stormy Weather, her big song. Just real amazing. She was across the board, had talent that spread across the board. And just a lovely lady, very talented lady. So, yes, I could get that. Wow. Well, aren't you lucky just to have Mary Wilson, superstar singer of the Supremes, telling Nicholas Stiles all of these wonderful tidbits? Now, I do have one question for you on that subject. What about the movie Dreamgirls? You mentioned it early on at the top of our wonderful talks today, but what can you tell us? Did she ever mention the movie Dreamgirls or Jennifer Hudson or Jennifer Holliday for that much or anybody?
To me, no. To me, no. Well, I know she was really good friends with Shirley Ralph.
Oh, she still remained friends with Shirley Ralph.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Who played the Diana part in the Broadway version
of
Dreamgirls. Right, right. The original Dina Jones. Well, yes, we know our research here at Hair Radio.
So I tell you, which is amazing. Yes, well, you guys know Shirley Ralph. She went on to star in Brandy. And, of course, Brandy was on the cover of our Upscale magazine just a couple months ago. I just think there's a full circle thing going on here. I think it's amazing. And what a remarkable story. And, again, if you've just joined us, if you're just tuning in to the Hair Radio Morning Show, I'm having an amazing conversation this morning with Mr. Nicholas Stiles, who is recalling this amazing journey that he has. I think it was a life-changing journey. Supporting, yes, and being the assistant to the one and only superstar, legendary music icon artist of the Supremes. We're talking about Mary Wilson. I mean, the Supremes, you have to understand, really the most successful female group of all time. Mm-hmm. Of all time. And, yeah, and just so many different things. They led the way on style. They taught the world about style. They opened up so many doors professionally and otherwise. They were just amazing. I mean, you know, when you think of it. And, you know, so we'll talk a little bit more about that. But I want to kind of talk now about some of the, you know, and I think this is going to be a little bit of the hard part, because I want to talk about what happened, you know, how all of this came to kind of a sad end. And so you're working, you're doing all this wonderful, good stuff. How did the conversation come about that you were going to travel to her home out in Las Vegas right before all of this happened, that she passed? What was the crux of that conversation?
Well, first I had to call my cousin. My cousin had offered me earlier that year, so this was November 2021, and in January of 2021, kind of like it's kind of like you said, full circle, because in January 2020, not 2021.
Oh, okay.
And then November 2020, not 2021.
Oh.
And yes, it kind of like full circle, because in January of 2021, that's when I moved to Vegas. But in January 2020, my cousin had offered me kind of like to come stay with him in Vegas. He was like, you know, hey, cuz, he's like, I see that you're doing drag, and he was like, you're really good. He's like, I think that, you know, you should move to Vegas, and you can come stay with me. I'm not going to charge you anything. You know, he's like, I really want you to come out here and do drag, perform. I said, oh, I'll think about it. Moving anywhere wasn't anywhere in my mind, or it was, but my bank account said otherwise. So I, you know, wasn't planning on moving anywhere. So when November 2020 came, and I get this email from Mary Wilson, the first thing I could think of to do was call my cousin. And I called him, and I told him, I said, hey, Mary Wilson from the Supremes just offered me a job in Vegas to come be her assistant. Can I come stay with you? Is that offer still on the table? He said, yeah. He's like, you know, I have a roommate now, but other than that, he's like, if my roommate's cool with it, I definitely don't mind. I said, okay. So I call up Mary, and I said, hey, I saw your email, and if you need me to come to Vegas, I can do that. When do you need me to come? And I kind of just jumped the gun. She was like, no, 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 you don't have to come tomorrow. You can kind of slow down. And started laughing.
Well, all right, we're back live. That is the incredible story from Nicholas. What can I say, Nicholas Stiles, on the you know, being the last assistant to superstar singer Mary Wilson of the Supremes. Tomorrow on Friday's show, March 18th of 2022, we want you to tune in for the second and final installment of this, in which he literally describes, Nicholas describes, finding Mary as, you know, she had passed away. So you don't want to miss those details. He describes it in great detail. And it's an exclusive right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. So that is going to air tomorrow at 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Central Time. You don't want to miss it. It'll be on from 7 to 8. And then at 8 o'clock in the morning, we've got a live guest joining us. You guys know Wayne Smith. He hasn't been on the air in quite a while with us. So we're excited. He's the former mayor for 12 years. Legendary political strategist and big-time businessman who was, again, mayor for 12 years out in Irvington, New Jersey. He's going to tell us all about that experience and so much more to help us to navigate our lives. And we're bringing him to our network right here at Hair Radio. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Upscale Magazine. We're launching a brand-new show for them on the Hair Radio Network, and we'll have more on their network that's in the works right now. So listen, this has been an incredible, credible show today. It's been my great honor to memorialize David Babai, the super celebrity hairstylist from out in Beverly Hills, who was a great friend to our broadcast, and I will never forget him. So what we're going to do is to create a beautiful audio piece that you guys will be able to search on Google. It will be a separate podcast over on our podcast platform, and we'll get that out to everybody. So look for that through social media, in which you can just hear the highlights from today's memorial. And if that's not enough, you want the whole thing, we're going to share our entire three-hour episode today. So this live broadcast will be available for playback over at hairradio.com. So switch over to our streaming network at hairadio.com. Catch the three-hour playback at noon and then again at 3 o'clock. So again, you can stream it back from beginning to end starting at noon right here on Otwell over at our separate platform at hairadio.com. Again, that's our 24-hour, 7-day-a-week streaming network. So lots of things happening. So we'll see you back here tomorrow from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. if you want to be part of this live experience. And then catch all of our classic shows and so much more new shows and content and special interviews. We will also have the weather available over at the 24/7 streaming network that we didn't get the second set of cities on. We'll put that over there this morning. So it doesn't have to end here, as you guys will hear in just a moment on our outro. Everything continues over at hairadio.com. It's been my great honor. I want to thank all of our amazing fans from all over the world, literally, for tuning in. It's been our show number 686 on this March 17th of 2022 morning here in Brooklyn, New York. We're going to get up to about 50, it should be in the mid-50s today on this cloudy day here in New York City. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Make it an awesome day, everybody. Let's go ahead and get our outro on. It's been fun. All right.
Well, it's that time to bring this episode of the Hair Radio Morning Show to a close. But it does not end here. The show continues over at our 24/7 Hair Radio broadcast network at www.hairradio.com. Now, I must thank today's great guests and our legacy advertisers. These are the folks who've been supporting our show over the years, including Dr. Raglan, Yolanda Raglan at fixyourfeet.com. They are the very best in foot care. She has two locations, one in New York City and the other in Maryland. I also want to take a moment to acknowledge the amazing Troy Ballard, of course, from the West Coast out in Southern California. His company is called Smooth Black Ink. Now, he offers the very, very best in hair care for the entire family. He is a legendary hairstylist and educator. And also, he's a program host right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. We just appreciate him again. That's Troy Ballard,
a.k.a. Smooth Black of Smooth Black Ink. Also, we are talking about a complete line of products for the guys now. It's at Rugged Evolution. Now, Rugged Evolution Beard Care is the actual name of the company. Rugged Evolution Beard Care makes a complete line. I love their products. Go to www.ruggedevo.com for more details. Again, that's ruggedevo, that's EVO.com for complete details on their products. Also, stimulating.